You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, Nathan Zagura, and of course, Matt Wilhelm with you here. Don't just watch the draft, play the draft. Dog Pound, join me in a Play the Draft contest with the Cleveland Browns. Play the Draft is a free, easy-to-play fantasy game for the NFL Draft. Find undervalued draft prospects for your chance to win VIP experiences, tickets, gear, and more from the Browns. Sign up now at clevelandbrowns.com. Let's do it, folks. Sign up. Zagura and Wilhelm with you here. We were talking uniforms earlier, so we want to hear from you on those. 216-578-0850. Dante Whitner's tweets as well. Got a tweet from at Peace to You. He says, go find the uniforms. My God, man, you're in the building. Hunt like a Joe Thomas. These things are under a lock and key, the likes of which I've never seen before here in this building. Want to talk to you guys about some news coming out. Pro Football Talk saying Jeff Fisher admitting that the Browns, quote, there were discussions with the Browns late in the process for Sam Bradford. Never really any concrete offers per se. The misconception is it started the combine. It didn't. I stood up at the combine and said that Sam was our quarterback. This came well after that, several days before we initiated the trade with Nick, but there was a pick involved. There were numerous things that were discussed, different options. The compensation looked different over a period of a couple days. I'm not going to go into what it was, but it did not involve a player. So, it sounds like, you know, Adam Kaplan saying the Browns did offer number 19. So that's Jeff Fisher admitting that the Browns did, in fact, talk to them about Sam Bradford. No real surprise there at all. Want to talk about another thing about the NFL draft. At Grantland.com, Bill Barnwell does his draft value, where he has a very comprehensive chart that he uses that isn't just about what the pick is, and it's not the old chart. It's actually based on where you pick, the predicted success of that pick over the first 5 years of their careers, and the cost of having them on your roster. So it's not a perfect model, but it's an enhancement on the original draft value, sure, which puts too much emphasis on high first-rounders than mid-round picks, etc. The Browns this year with their 10 picks have a value of 66.0. That is best in the NFL because of the two firsts, the two fourths, and six in the first top 115.
And that's encouraging.
And you need to do something with it.
It absolutely is. And that's exactly where I was going with my point is that's all great and all fine to hear. And we would hope, I would have thought, you know, after last year, I think we're probably still sitting pretty within his charts to a certain extent with the cost of a quarterback, with the cost of a high, you know, the number eight pick, and Justin Gilbert, and everybody else performing the way they did from the second round and beyond. But it's to me, the proof is in the pudding. And we can max out, and as I've said, we could be the most exciting team in the draft with the most picks, with two first-rounders, and other analysts with formulas of their own can say that you know, we're going to have a great draft, and prospectively we're number one and all this other stuff. But Ray Farmer and his staff, in his first full year, has to do diligence with this opportunity, and we have to turn those picks. And I would love to go. And I know Tony Grossi from ESPN Cleveland talks about it. You have to go 50% on those picks. So five out of those 10 guys have to turn into players, starters, significant contributors for this football team.
If you do that, and then next year you're going to have 11 most likely, and you do that again, that's 10 players. And you think of from last year, from the rookies, you know, the jury is still out on Gilbert and Manziel, but for now we won't count them.
Sure.
But you still had, you had West, Kirksey, Betonio, and then you had Crow, Kawan Williams. That's
Pierre
five
Desir
right there. Desir, I think, as a developmental, I'll give him, like, he's still got to come along. But you did have five guys. And Taylor Gabriel, sick. That's another guy making solid contributions from last year's rookie class. And that's not giving anything to Gilbert or Manziel.
Absolutely. And, again, just to, as I listened to the Really Big Show today with Tony Grossi, the one other point that he made, that in speaking to Ray Farmer and being around Farmer, Pettine, and Haslam out there in Arizona, the one thing that he did say is, yes, last year we went out and got aggressive with Whitner and Dansby and Hawkins and Jim Dre. This year we've got Hartline, McCown, Dwayne Bowe, Randy Starks, and Tremont Williams in via free agency. So that you got to figure that's what, nine players via or 10 players via free agency. He said he wouldn't be surprised if that number dwindles down by the year because we're having multiple years with successful drafts with the same regime, the same evaluators, the same head coach, everyone seeing eye to eye that you're going to go add one or two pieces via free agency strategically and judiciously, but you're getting value out of what you're drafting each and every year.
Well, and that's kind of what, you know, that's the way that the Ravens do it. That's the way that the Patriots do it. That's the way that the Green Bay Packers do it. And that's what you have to do. But it's predicated upon successful drafts, so you have talent that is significantly worth retaining for your team. So that's what they've got to do. And if they can do that, I think they'll be fine. And I want to see immediate impact from those first rounders, which is why I think it's likely that the team is going to go defense in the first round. But I still want to see that wide receiver. Yes, I do. 216-578-0850. By the way, speaking of the owners' meetings being in Arizona, that's where I want to be. I want to be in Scottsdale. I miss Scottsdale.
Do you?
What do you miss most about Scottsdale?
The weather, I love the desert. I love the weather, and I love Tex-Mex food. I love margaritas. I love golf. I love, like, in the desert, when it's clear, you can see, it seems like everything, the colors are awesome.
Yeah.
You can see for forever. That's, like, that's my number one retirement spot.
Do you love
spot.
The dry heat?
I do like the dry heat, yeah.
Vegas?
Yeah.
Arizona, dry heat?
I do like Vegas as well, yes, but for totally different reasons. Yeah, I'm not about the dry heat at all.
Not about the golf.
Like, do you want to live here forever? Or like, or when your kids go to college and you guys can, like, kind of go wherever, are you going to go back to San Diego?
Possibly, yes. Maybe even sooner. And it's, you know, in this industry.
But San Diego is where you
want to
go.
Lead you many places. Yeah, San Diego would be the place I'd want to go. I think Florida or the West Coast, something West Arizona, wouldn't hate Arizona.
I'm not a Florida person.
I could be a Florida. The more time I spend down in Florida, the more I'm swayed. But it's highly populated by many people over the age of 60. And I don't dig that.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm still young at heart.
That's right. Scottsdale's got a little bit more of a younger scene.
It does. It does. Yeah. I got some great friends doing a lot of big things in Arizona.
Yeah?
Yes.
Like what?
A gentleman who owned and operated a few bars on campus at The Ohio State University took his show on the road and now owns and operates
at Arizona State.
Probably about a dozen or more bars and clubs in Scottsdale. Scottsdale Knights. It's like they do bookings for DJs, you know, VIP, you know, bottle service at many of the best restaurants and clubs all around Arizona in the Phoenix area.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, my buddy
and they do huge, you know, Buckeye bashes each and every Saturday, watch parties. So it's great.
That is great.
Yes.
See, we should go out there. There's a guy that when I was doing all the fantasy football stuff, a guy named Joe Diggs who ended up following me and I ended up helping him win a couple of his leagues or whatever, who basically runs the W in Scottsdale.
Oh, sweet.
And like all the bar scene and everything there. So when we go down, you get to take care of it. Best Italian restaurant I ever had down there, Marcelino's.
Nice.
Best Italian restaurant I've ever been to.
Not Olive Garden?
In the world. Not Olive Garden.
Not Olive Garden.
Marcelino's. Okay. Unbelievable. Right. So if you're ever in Scottsdale, check out Marcelino's, and I think you will thank me for it. It's just unbelievable. By the way, Tony Grossi saying, Roger Goodell just told me a ruling on Browns Texgate will come in the next couple of days. Goodell on the Browns Texas scandal, we take it very seriously. Again, he's saying that, take seriously, I've not been brought up to speed completely on that, but they think something will happen in the next couple of days. My sources are telling me that it won't be anything as significant as people are fearing that it will be.
Like a draft pick?
I hope that's the case. I think it could still be a draft pick, but I don't think it would be a significant draft pick.
Gotcha.
So hopefully that will be the case for the Browns. Hiram in Cleveland. What's going on, Hiram?
Hey, guys.
How you doing, man?
Hey. If you don't mind, chime in, though, Nathan. I want to ask Matt about the Browns' defense last year.
Yeah, go ahead, man.
Okay, but Matt, I want you to solve, before I get, this pertains to the Browns, I want you to solve an argument for me. I was talking to some guys on Twitter, and they say when you play a 3-4, it's imperative that you get your defensive line gets pressure on the quarterback. Imperative is the key word.
No,
that's absolutely not true.
I agree. This is what I see it. I said the main thing of your defensive line is to take up blockers and to take up space so your inside linebackers can make tackles and your outside linebackers can have a one-on-one to get to the quarterback.
The most preferable the most preferred setup for a 3-4 defense is, and what a great 3-4 defense, and I'm talking about the Wade Phillips time that I spent with him in San Diego, as you see him done in Houston, everywhere he'll do it again in Denver this year, is a 3-4 defense should have two double-digit sack guys at outside linebacker, which in the Browns' case should be Paul Kruger and Barkevious Mingo, or Paul Kruger and whoever else is rushing from the other side. You have the encouraging thing that I loved about Carlos Dansby was he's a stat filler. He gets sacks. He gets pass defense. He gets interceptions. And so Carlos Dansby, we saw, you know, led the team in sacks for a while on the early portion of the season last year. So an inside linebacker or between the two inside linebackers, you should share probably somewhere between 6 and 9 sacks. You know, one guy with 4, one guy with 5, one guy with 6, one guy with 3, so on and so forth. You might have one, the 5 technique or 7 technique, the guy that plays kind of on the inside eye or outside eye of a tackle, because that tackle is threatened by that outside linebacker so often that one good defensive tackle that aligns out there can beat that guard with good speed and a good get off, and he'll have about five or six sacks. But your other two guys, your three technique and your nose tackle, they're space eaters. They are grabbing. They are Vince Wilfork's. They are Jamal Williams was the guy that I played with. The Casey Hamptons of the world that are active, not like, you know, Ottavio Rubin standing up and just latching on and getting pushed backwards towards the linebackers.
Right.
But active, penetrating, creating space for those free-flowing linebackers, as he mentioned with Robertson and DeEnvy.
Right. If you get out of your three technique, he slips the guard a few times and picks up four or five sacks, you're thrilled.
Absolutely.
The guy, J.J. Watt, is kind of like that. Yes. Five technique in your 3-4, yes, that is like the havoc wreaker.
Absolutely.
And so for the Browns, when you think about the Browns, the way they line up, and actually an article just being posted at clevelandbrowns.com, and we'll have Andrew Gribble talk about that when he joins us, is that Randy Starks has been brought in to be that 3 technique, big guy. They're thinking of moving Phil Taylor to the nose, back to the nose, big guy, space
like
eater.
That.
And then
active
you got
body.
Dez Bryant and Armani Bryant are kind of your 5 techniques to rush the
passer. Dez Bryant and Armani Bryant are the epitome of those 5-7 techniques in a 3-4 defense.
Yep.
Which you saw, Dez Bryant started slow, but had that burst of games where it was like, what, 4 sacks in 5 games, 4 sacks in 6 games? He was just penetrating and active is what you get out of that. And what did he end the season with, 6 sacks?
Yeah.
Yes. Very productive. That's exactly the way it should go in a 3-4 defense.
And that's what you want. And you're going to have John Hughes, who I think is going to rotate in at 3 technique and probably some 5. Billy Wynn, same thing.
More
3
passing
and some
downs,
5.
A little bit more active,
right,
guy.
So I think that you've got a good mix on the line. And that's why you hear a guy like Danny Shelton link to this team to come in and be that nose,
yes,
just the big space-eating nose. Although he's a space-eating nose tackle, but he still has a long way to go against the run. He's very good against the run, but he also is a guy who can get to the quarterback,
yes,
as a big man from the middle, which can be very disruptive when you have that player making plays like that. Let's go now to Scott in Cleveland. Scott, welcome to the show.
You guys, love the show. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, man.
You definitely talked about a lot of the stuff that I wanted to bring up there, and I guess my question is, I don't know that it's been brought up, and I don't have stats to justify it, but a lot of the ways that people talk about the death of our run game went when Alex Mack went down, I think we started to get run all over when Phil Taylor was not in the rotation. So always assuming good health, I think our defensive line is actually pretty deep, especially if we go and get a Danny Shelton or someone kind of high in the first round. My question there is, do you guys think that Armani Bryant has the physical tools to bounce outside and kind of replace Jabal Sheard in that hybrid role where Jabal was more of a pass rusher and run stuffer and then would kind of yield to Barkevious Mingo on straight pass downs for when he would go into drops? Like, we know Armani can get after the quarterback. Does he have the speed to play out there? Because we know he has kind of size that he can hold down and set an edge as a backer against the run.
I wouldn't be against that at all. And I don't know if that's part of the thinking. You've also got Scott Solomon there, but I don't know if that's part of the thinking. Matt, I am certainly curious to get your take on it, but I could see him kind of being Armani Bryant, maybe kind of like that, you know. Remember, Aldon Smith played alongside a Jason Smith, and then they were able to use each other effectively to get to the quarterback. And when I think of Armani Bryant, he's bigger at 6'4", 265, but he's not a huge lineman. I think that he's
no.
a guy who could, in certain pass rushing situations, you'll see that.
But as we've seen, and we got rid of a guy that did that, was a 4-3, hand-in-the-ground defensive lineman, essentially playing out of position. I wouldn't hate, in a certain front, with Armani Bryant aligning in a wide 9 technique.
Sometimes they like him inside because they think his speed
he's
can get him past
the
guard.
Yeah, he's active, but he can also get mauled in there
because
there's bats in those caves in there, man. That's what we used to say. But the one thing that's very encouraging about this defensive front is, from the players in that room, is Mike Pettine and Jim O'Neill, if you go back and watch a few Browns games, we're not consistently in the same front. We're not only rotating bodies and rotating guys, we're able to play into their strengths by playing many different fronts as well.
Yep.
Unique fronts where no one's aligned on the center, and you have two 3-3 techniques, so that way you'd have Taylor out on one and maybe Hughes on the other. You know, which allows Armani Bryant to maybe play that 5 or 7 technique, and you're bringing, you know, some inside middle cross, you know, all kinds of fun
cross
stuff.
Dogs. That
you
could,
exactly. You've got many different personalities and body types in that defensive line room, which allows you to do a lot of things. And I think, you know, now that we have a second year in this system, these guys are just going to absolutely dominate up front. And that's why it puts precedence, and in most cases I'm talking about, pass and production versus the pass, but shoring up that run and understanding and trusting everybody's role is the key to good run defense.
It is, and that's what the Browns hopefully will do, looking major point of emphasis to improve upon that run defense here in 2018. and 15. All right, when we come back, we'll have more of your phone calls, 216-578-0850. Billy Wynn set to join us around 2 p.m. here live in studio. Certainly looking forward to catching up with our old pal Buck Wild, Billy Wynn. Keep it coming here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.